You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web. Beware the Chinaman by Stephen Taylor. The future is electric, but who holds the power? Sent by government agent Howard to pick up a stolen hard drive, Danny soon finds himself fighting for his life as he's chased across Europe by the mysterious and deadly Chinaman. The hard drive holds information to expose an organization called the Board, and its chairman wants it back. The Board's plan is to save the planet and gain global dominance through its ecological empire. The execution of the plan is by any means necessary. Beware the Chinaman, the new thriller by Stephen Taylor. Unleashing Iron, Book 3 of the Unwilling Souls series by Gregory D. Little, arrives April 24th and is available for pre-order now. Cess Lucani has one mission: keep humankind's murderous gods imprisoned. She's about to fail. The gods have achieved the unthinkable, inhabiting human avatars from within their prison's walls. They now gather followers and work to break it open from the outside. One of those avatars is Cess's own father. Just as all seems lost, Cess learns of a recently unearthed artifact so powerful that it can repair the prison and save her father from the possession that is killing him. But in the wrong hands, the artifact could demolish the prison instead of repairing it, and it's already been stolen. In a desperate race to control the object that will save or end the world, Cess faces a devastating choice as she realizes that no one is immune to the artifact's ancient promise of forgotten power. Not her family, not her friends, not even herself. Unleashing Iron is available for pre-order now. Order before April 24th to get the special sale price. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, my guest is Sheena Kamal. You might remember a couple of years ago, Sheena was on the show talking about her debut novel, The Lost Ones, and what an amazing novel. Well, today she's back to talk about book three in that series, the Nora Watts series. It's called No Going Back. And let me tell you what, if you like that first book, like I did, you are not prepared for where this book is going to take you. It's amazing, and you need to have all three of these books on your bookshelf. Welcome back to the show, Sheena.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for saying all those nice things about my work. I'm not even paying you, and I'm getting all this for free. Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean every bit of it. Sheena, you know, we normally start each show with the question, what's your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller? But we answered that in the last time we talked. You talked about and we kind of had a funny moment where we were talking about that first metaphor and realizing, you know, how exciting it is and how groundbreaking when you discover the power of metaphor, and that as writers, we're always chasing that metaphor, and you know, kind of like a junkie is chasing a high, and you almost never achieve the thrill of that first metaphor. And so with three books out now, how does that feel? Are you still chasing that feeling of telling a story, of enveloping people up in worlds that you make? Like, what is that feeling as someone who's got three books out now compared to back then?
Well, I have to be honest with you, I don't remember the metaphor thing. And
it was something about a tree.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Maybe. I don't, I feel like so much has happened that I was so young then. I was so innocent. I was just
all of that's been stripped away. Yeah.
How's that for a metaphor for you?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very wise, and I'm really glad I said it, but I don't remember what it was. But three books in, like, I'm still chasing stories. I'm still in love with the worlds that I create. And, you know, sometimes, because I've had just a little bit more experience in the publishing world now. Sometimes the landscape sort of makes me scratch my head and I don't quite understand it still, or that there's just a lot of stuff out there that as a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed new author or debut author, you don't really understand. And so now living through, you know, the publication of, actually it's four books. I've got a YA that was released in Canada and the UK last month. So four books in now, I've had so much more experience, and I find that sometimes, like, I lose the thrill of chasing the story. And now, you know, as this old and wizened soul that I've become, it's really helpful for me to remind myself that the story is the thing. I mean, the story is why we do this, because we love stories, we love sharing them, and people love engaging with stories just in general. I mean, that's the nature of the human animal, I think.
For sure. I know that in your younger years, you were an activist, and we talked about, you know, those powerful feelings that young people have and want to change the world and make the world make people see the world the way we see it. And then we, you know, as we live a little, get a little older, and I'm not saying that activism is not important. That's not what I'm saying at all. But we find different ways maybe to bring our worldview to other people. And if you are a storyteller and you can write books, a lot of times you can communicate those things that you're passionate about without hitting people over the head with it. As you know, with your fourth book now, the third in the Nora Watts series, do you find it easier to talk about the world and maybe the problems that you see in the world, the things that you would like to see different in new and unique ways by couching them in story?
Do I find it easier? I mean, I find it just about the same, in the sense that, you know, like most writers and artists out there, I'm a deeply sensitive soul. And, you know, these things really, really affect me on a personal level. And my inability to rise to my own expectations in terms of, being an activist really bothers me. And so I've been trying to let that go and trying to be a lot easier on myself with that stuff. But writing about issues is still as important and still as heart-wrenching as it's always been, because, you know, storytellers, we live through the eyes of our characters. And if you're talking about The Lost Ones, touched on a lot of different things. Mining was one thing, you know, one of the things I talked about, gender violence, you know, so these things, and I'm still talking about these things and in my work, and they do affect me, you know. It's it's hard to let go, and I'm trying to get better at that. Not let go as in like, oh, I don't care, but let go as in still being able to like myself, and you know, to come to terms with the fact that maybe storytelling is how I approach it, and to be comfortable with that, and maybe I shouldn't be. I don't know. You know, this is the thing: is that the world is changing, and we all need to be part of it in our own ways, and in ways that feel right. So maybe that'll change for me. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Sheena, as a reader, do you remember the first mystery or thriller? Or mystery thriller that kind of opened your imagination to the power of these kinds of stories? You know, that we read mysteries and we read stories that get our heart rate up for all kinds of reasons. But, you know, we can't deny that these kinds of stories have, you know, deep emotional impacts on us. Do you remember the first one that you read? Maybe it was a series or a book or an author who just opened you up to what this kind of story can do?
Yeah, I would have to say there were earlier ones, but the one that really stands out for me is Smilla's Sense of Snow by Peter Hoeg, and it's a Danish novel, and it was the precursor to like Lisbeth Salander, you know, those was that kind of character. So the main character is biracial. She's half Danish, half Greenlander. And through her eyes, you get to see Europe, and you get to look at colonialism specifically with regard to Greenland, because there was a death of a little boy, and the little boy was a Greenlander. And the story is so impactful. It's so beautifully told. It does talk about environmental degradation. It talks about science, and it talks about the human heart and the human soul. And I just remember being so moved by it, just so impacted by this book, not just because of the issues that it raised, but because the story was so fantastic. And I think that made me realize I want to do this in this way. Or maybe I hold that book in such high regard that I'm not sure that I can ever achieve what he's achieved. But to me, that is such a goal, you know, to craft such a perfect novel.
Right. Well, it's in that same way that as writers, we're always chasing that metaphor and looking for a new way to say something. I think we're also chasing that emotional response from readers. You know, if we have a book that hit us in a very specific way, we would love to do that to someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. And even just to ourselves in the writing, if I could give myself the feeling of what he gave to me as I'm writing. And sometimes I do hit on, and maybe other readers, you know, they'll be like, no, not at all, Sheena. But like in the writing, sometimes I feel this sort of connection where it's like, yes. And I have to say, with No Going Back, which was a difficult book for me to write, but as I approached the ending, I started to feel that connection with the world and the material in a way that sort of does hang on to me, or, you know, that I do cling to. And that I do sort of compare to the feeling of reading that, you know, Smilla's Sense of Snow for the first time.
The new book, No Going Back, this is the third book for Nora Watts. There are certain protagonists that we enjoy reading because That character reminds us of ourselves sometimes. Maybe it is an ideal that we hope to be like. There's something endearing about a lot of protagonists that we like to follow along with. That's why we keep buying the books. Nora Watts is a different kind of protagonist. She can be off-putting to a lot of people when you first read her, and she doesn't behave the way that you expect her to, or, she's brash and abrasive, yet you still, there's something about her that makes you want to see what she's going to do, where she's going to go, and makes you want to befriend her. Could you talk a little bit about creating a protagonist who is very different from what we would expect in a lot of books, and how do you make her likable, make her a character that people root for and want to follow along with?
Yeah, I mean, Nora is. She's a damaged soul. And often with people like that, underneath there is a wealth of vulnerability. There are the most incredible stories, and there are big hearts. But you don't really, they don't let you in. And that's the thing. So really when it comes to writing her, her interactions with other people, you know, she is abrasive, you know, she is tough because she thinks that people won't help her. People won't see her. And because they've so often not. And what I play with then is her internal life and her own sense of morality and her own moral compass, which is really unlike anyone else's. You know, she doesn't do the, I want to say like, not the legal thing, but she doesn't do like, the correct thing, but she always does the right thing. Yeah, and so that is something that I play with. And also, I'm also obsessed with artists, right? And so what I use for her is to get at her and to get at that big heart and that sense of vulnerability and emotional core is I use music. And I've always been fascinated by musicians because I don't have a musical bone in my body. So for me, you know, when I wrote the line, I forget what the actual line is in the Lost Ones, but it was something about the blues and how the blues affected her. And I was like, yes, that's it. That's how you get to her. And so I use music as a way to open her up and to show that, you know, she does have this wealth of talent that she just can't share with the world anymore, but she knows it. And if you ever heard her sing, you would know it too. And that's the thing too, with artists that fascinate me is that if you, you know, sometimes like celebrity is celebrity, but sometimes when a singer opens their mouth and their gift just comes out and it touches your heart and you may not like that person, if you ever met them, you know, you may not want to listen to an interview with them or whatever, but their gift is to speak to your heart in that way. And I wanted to give her that.
I completely understand what you're saying there. In book one, when we first meet Nora, we learn pretty quickly, that something has happened in her past. She was pregnant and she gave up her child for adoption and, you know, trying to put the trauma of everything that had happened, behind her, she is then faced, she has to come face to face with the reality of all that all over again when that child is abducted. And then she has to try to help to, you know, the adoptive parents to get her back. And that, you know, that's a whole well of emotion, there that you get to mine. In book three, we are reminded, of Bonnie and that whole relationship. Can you tell me a little bit about, what the thought process for book three was and and thinking about what you were going to do to Nora in this book and what her challenges would be?
Yeah, I think so. For the first two books, you know, she's really coming to terms with the fact that she does have a daughter out there, and you know, she pushed that down, tried to forget it, and it sort of lingered in her mind. And so, with the first two books, she's coming to terms with it. She's accepting it, and she's starting to want a relationship. And when we meet her in the third book, she is on her way to see this daughter of hers, and she realizes that there is someone from her past who has a vendetta against her and is threatening not just her life, but Bonnie's life as well. And that, you know, creates such conflict for her, because it means that she's got to go into protector mode. So it's not just relationship mode. It's not just connection mode. It's like, I've got to protect this girl. And in true Nora style, she does it without really communicating. And that's something that is really hard to write. And taking her through that relationship of, or that instinct of she wants to protect, but she also wants a relationship, but she doesn't know how to do that. Like, these are things that I really was interested in for her, because sometimes these relationships are not easy, right? Any relationships, when, you know, and you have to work at them. And how does someone like Nora, who doesn't trust anybody and who doesn't let anyone in, how does she work at a relationship with a teenager?
Right. Oh man. You mentioned that you just recently published a YA novel in England. What is that book about? I haven't gotten to read it yet.
Yes, it's out in Canada and the UK, and apparently India. Okay. No one had told me. I found out via social media, like all good information. It's called Fight Like a Girl. And it's set in Toronto, which is where I grew up. And it's about this this teenage girl, Muay Thai fighter, who starts to suspect that her mother killed her father and that her mom has her sights set on another man. And so she's a fighter. She's a Muay Thai fighter. It's her last year of high school. There's a lot going on. And all she wants to do is train for her intense competition season that's coming up, and train and to fight. And, you know, she just has that, that drive, but then her mom starts behaving in these incomprehensible ways. And she's got to now deal with her home life. And that book for me is sort of an exploration of domestic violence and violence through sport, because Muay Thai is a sport that I've trained on and off for about a dozen years now. So I was really interested in getting into the mind of a girl Muay Thai fighter, because it's such a fascinating world, and Muay Thai is such a dynamic sport, and I really love it, and I wanted to kind of get in there.
I love it. Your Nora Watts books can be very intense, dark in some places, very you know, gritty. Lots of streetwise characters, and you deal with some very, very heavy topics. When you switch to write YA, how did you approach? You mentioned domestic violence, and then the sport violence of Muay Thai. How do you deal with the heaviness of those topics while thinking for a YA audience, if that makes sense?
Yeah, no, the question makes sense, but the fact is that I didn't think of it as YA. I approached it just about the same, and my agent at the time told me that it was YA just because of the age of the protagonist, and the voice is really outrageous in this book. So it's you know, this teen girl who is just really, really off the cuff, and you know, she's got no filter, and quite it's a colorful character. So one of the things that I do, even with the Nora books, I try is to inject some humor, inject some kind of some dirty humor, some off color humor, and you know, just in there to get you in someone's mind so that's really what it was. And I didn't know that it was YA, and I think it may be for an older YA audience perhaps. Because when my agent told me, I was like, but there's so much sex and cussing in there. Like, are you sure? And she's like, yeah, no, that's what kids like. And I was like, all right, well.
Like, I'm going to start watching some of these kids with a shifty eye. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. You're absolutely right. And the Nora books do have some very wry humor. And a lot of times, kind of gallows humor. There's something, that, you know, when we're going through trauma and, you know, bad times, sometimes humor just kind of naturally bubbles up out of that, and especially dark humor, and people outside the situation, you know, can take offense to that because they feel like you're not, giving the moment its due or whatever. But, you know, when you are in the moment, it's completely natural. Is that something that when you're writing that you're thinking about, you know, hey, this scene is really, I need to let the readers take a breath a minute, or does it just kind of naturally come out of the characters?
Yeah, I think it just naturally comes out of me because, you know, I'm from Trinidad and, you know, Trinidadians can't take anything seriously. So everything is like a dirty joke to us. So that's really where it is. And yeah, maybe, you know, I've been criticized before that my inability to take serious things seriously is a problem. Mostly by my ex-boyfriends. But yeah, but that's just the way that it is, right? It's I find that when something does get really dark, you have to inject a little bit of humor because people can't take all that tragedy. I don't want to look at tragedy and have it just be all tragic. Like, it's got to have some sort of something that makes you recognize the humanity in it. And because people are darkness and light and think inappropriate thoughts. And we all do, right?
Yeah. You would fit in so well in our family. We we will take a tragedy and turn it into a joke in a second. It's, yeah. That's so funny. Speaking of tragedies, you know, we're kind of going through something in the world right now. There's this virus and it's kind of shut down the whole world, and we're all trying to figure out what normal is, right now. And, you know, but the world must go on. And so we're talking about books and we're trying to bring some light into the world in the midst of all this stuff. As an author who is launching books, two books during this pandemic, what does that feel like?
It feels really overwhelming because there is no normal, and I don't know how to promote in this environment, and I'm not really very good at promoting anyway. You know, I'm good at talking to people. I like to go and talk to people, but I'm not good at saying things like, if you need a quarantine read, check out my da-da-da series. Like, no, but you know, and that's valid. That's really valid because maybe someone is looking for that. Like, maybe they are looking for a distraction that could be in the form of your book. But I can't do it. It doesn't feel real to me. It doesn't feel like authentic. If I could do it authentically, I would absolutely be like, make me your quarantine read, please. But I can't say that without being like, oh, crap. So it is something that I'm really struggling with, because I don't understand what is happening and I don't understand what the world is going to look like. And I'm, you know, when I'm a mess of confusion, I try not to spread it around too much, and be out there. And I feel like when you're promoting a book, you have to be out there a little bit. And I don't know how to do it sensitively.
Well, that's what podcasts are for. I'll tell people that for you.
Well, thank you. You're welcome. I appreciate it. No, and Yeah, I mean, and I think that there are ways that you can do it, and there's so many people involved in bringing a book to life that you don't want to let anyone down. I mean, I don't want to let anyone down. So this feeling of like I'm not sure how to do this is something that I don't appreciate about myself at this time.
Understood. No Going Back is the third book in the Nora Watts series. It's available everywhere now. Are there more stories coming from Nora? Does this third book end a trilogy? Or is Nora coming back? What does the future hold for you?
We are not sure. And I think that if this was the end, I love the way this book ends. And I'm really, really proud of these books. I'm getting so emotional. but yeah, but no, I mean, Nora changed my life, and I really am so grateful that this character came into my life just when I needed her, because she means a lot to me, and I'm not sure if it's the last one. I haven't really I'm not really there yet in terms of how to if to bring her back, because if I do bring her back, I want her to be a little different. And I want it, or not. I want her journey to make sense, and I want it to be a progression. I don't, you know, it's not, I'm not writing Vancouver crime fiction just for the sake of writing Vancouver crime fiction. I'm writing this person and seeing the world through her eyes. So if I bring her back, I will have had to change along with her, and I will have to have had to create a new perspective to write her. And so I have to be up to the task for it.
Completely understandable. What about your YA book? Will you pursue that character?
Well, okay, so the YA did not get a US publisher right off the bat, which was incredibly insulting to me. I was like, what's going on, America? Like, I thought you liked me. And are you breaking up with me? Oh, no, but it did actually, and so it'll be out in a couple of years. Maybe I would like to write her again, but I have another book that I'm sitting on. It's a manuscript that I'm going through an edit with, and when I think the time is right to submit to or to send to my agents and for her to show to my editors and whatnot, and see if we can get that book sold. I will put it out there. But right now, like I said, there's so much uncertainty, so much confusion, and I don't know that I can really stomach the idea of putting a book from my heart into this present publishing landscape. I don't think I could go through that again. You know, these past couple months have been sort of strange for me, putting No Going Back and Fight Like a Girl out there. So I want to make sure that I feel a lot more comfortable before I show people new work.
Well, whatever you decide, there are a lot of us that are excited to see what it is. So, excited for the future for you. No Going Back, the Nora Watts first trilogy, at least is finished, and we're going to have links to all of that in the show notes of this episode, encouraging everyone you need to buy this whole trilogy of books. Sheena, if people are just discovering you, is there a place where they can connect with you online to learn more about what you do?
Yes, well, I'm back on Instagram, so my handle is at Sheena Kamal Writes. I'm really bad at social media. I probably shouldn't say this. I hope my publicist doesn't listen to this these things. Well, she probably does though. But yeah, so I'm back on Instagram. I think I'm on Facebook. I will put my website back online soon, guys.
Are you just Sheena Kamal on your social media?
Yes.
Great.
I'm the little brown one.
We'll put links to all of it in the show notes of this episode. Sheena, this is always fun to chat. Thank you so much for taking time to come back on the show.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed chatting with you, and I hope that you are doing well in these crazy times.
Before We Ever Spoke by Dan Largent. Cleveland, Ohio, 2006. After a chance encounter, three people soon find out that life can sometimes thrust us into the public eye, even when taking great measures to avoid it. Cooper Madison was the best pitcher in baseball after being drafted number one overall in 1996 from the small Gulf Coast town of Pass Christian, Mississippi. 1 year after announcing his sudden and shocking retirement, he finds himself seeking anonymity in Cleveland, Ohio. Kara Knox is the youngest sibling to three older brothers. After a tragic work accident to her closest relative, she has built up a tough exterior as she begins her final year of college at Cleveland State University. Jason Knox, Kara's oldest brother, is the lead detective on Cleveland's Edgewater Park killer case. After months without a suspect, he's feeling the heat from his media-hungry chief. Serendipity intervenes, and all three learn that perception and reality are paths that rarely ever intersect. Before We Ever Spoke by Dan Largent. Hey folks, you really ought to check out Patricia Gillum's Heroes of Corvus series. Book one is called A Superhero's Duty, a fight between a second-generation superhero named Red Bolt and a villain-for-hire named Icarus goes terribly wrong, resulting in the drowning deaths of three innocent civilians and orphaning a six-year-old boy. Racked with guilt, Red Bolt visits Cameron Wilson at the hospital every night and won't leave the boy's side until he falls asleep. Befriended by a night shift nurse, the man in costume begins to disclose what really happened after the fight and why he feels the death of Cameron's parents and sister fall on his actions. A superhero didn't survive that night, and Cameron and the rest of the city are not out of danger. A Superhero's Duty, Book 1 of the Heroes of Corvus by Patricia Gillum. Get this series now.